This has to be one of my favorite gospel lessons. It's a particular favorite for a lot of different reasons, and there's a lot going on here in the story, and so it's incumbent upon us maybe to take a little time and to think about what's really happening here. As John says at the outset, this is now the third time that Jesus appeared to the disciples, so Jesus, we know, is risen from the dead, and he is showing himself in this change, this transformed self that he is. His body, his spirit, his soul is all right there, but it's somehow very different than they were used to. And so it's no wonder that perhaps they weren't quite sure who this guy on the side of the lake really was. So it is that as they're going along, Jesus says to them, as we heard about the dialogue between them, you know, about the fish and all that sort of thing. But interestingly, that John is the one who says, "It is the Lord." And Simon Peter, in his usual impetuous way, puts on some clothes and jumps in the water. He just, you know, Peter is one of those people, got to do something. And so he sees Jesus over there and he's eager, and so in his eagerness, he jumps in and leaves everybody else to take care of the fish. Now, the fish, there's an interesting thing there, too. Because they've been fishing all night long, which was sort of the normal thing. Now, we might hear this word in our experience, "I'm going fishing." Well, that's usually, in our experience, someone is going to go off to a quiet place and, you know, sort of in a boat, not bother putting any bait on the hook, just throw it out there so it looks like we're doing something, and just sort of rest. That's not what's going on here. This is their livelihood. And you know, the common purse that they held together as this band of troopers around Jesus, maybe it was kind of empty because we heard how Judas Iscariot used to kind of help himself to that. So we don't know that they had any money anymore. So maybe they had to go out and earn some. So they're going out to do their daily work. At least Peter was. He was the one who was always sort of concerned about such things. So he says, "I'm going fishing." And the rest say, "Okay, yeah, we'll come along." And out there all night long and picking the net up, throwing it back, picking the net up, throwing it back, probably getting a lot of stuff in there that doesn't look like fish at all. And then daylight comes and they see this man on the shore. He says, "Throw your net over the right side of the boat." Now, in another telling of this story, you know, Jesus tells them, and they go, "Yeah, well, we've been here all night long. Who do you think you are, knowing, you know, where to throw the net?" But they do it anyway, and all of a sudden, there it is, this great catch of fish. Now, there's an awful lot of detail in this particular gospel lesson that isn't usually in lessons like this, so much so that, for example, John counts the number of fish. Now, as fishermen, they probably often counted the number of fish because they needed to sell them for their profit and make sure they didn't eat too many of them to eat up the profits. And so more than likely, they normally counted them, but for some reason, John records the exact number, 153. Now that doesn't sound like, well, it's about 20 or about 200 or about 150. 153. And above that, he says another interesting point. He says, "The net was not torn." Now, often we even hear in the gospel lessons how Jesus is going along the shore, and as he's calling these disciples, they're often seen by the side of the lake repairing their nets. Fishermen's nets tear all the time. Particularly with a big haul of fish like that, you'd expect strings to be popping everywhere. But it says, "The net was not torn." So to me, that means there's some significance to that. So let's think about that a minute. Scholars have negotiated and wondered about this number, 153, for a very long time. But there's one particular Bible scholar that I am very attached to. His name is William Barclay, and he has a wonderful little series of volumes. He's since gone to God many years ago, but he wrote this a long time ago, the Daily Study Bible series. And in the devotion for that day that this is assigned for a particular gospel lesson, this man knew a lot about Palestinian culture and of Jesus' day. And he said, there is a significance to that number, and he conjectures that this is the number of, well, we might call them tribes or language groups or nations, or however we want to group people together. But basically, he's saying these are all of the ones that could be enumerated, kind of like going through all of the countries in the United Nations. We could say these are all the nations of the world. So that's kind of the way that they were thinking about this. And in the day that John was writing this, they would count 153. So in one way, we're interpreting this as being that this message, this catching, is to catch the entire world. The big fish are the nations of the world. And in fact, the gospel is about ready to cast a net to the whole world. And the net was not torn. Which means, perhaps, in particular, that this is not the work of any normal kind of course of affairs, but rather, this is a work of God. And that this haul of fish is perfect in every way. The exact right number of fish, and the fact that the net is not torn. That this gospel of God is going to be proclaimed to all the nations, and the net will not be torn. There will not be one lost in the end. But that the good news of Christ is meant for one and for all. Then suddenly we shift focus a little bit. There's Jesus on the shore of the lake, and he's got a little charcoal fire going there. I didn't realize that he was a chef, but there it is. He's got his charcoal fire and some bread. He must have been making bread someplace or went off to buy some perhaps before, but, you know, he was Jesus too. Maybe he just sort of, there it was, but there's bread. There's bread, and he asks, there's already fish on there. I don't know where the fish came from either, but then he says, bring some more over. You know, you're a crowd. You're going to have to cook some of those. So he says, bring them over. And so they're sitting around the campfire sharing a meal. Sharing a meal. Remember that? It's kind of what we do up here, isn't it? We come together as God's people to share a meal. In John's gospel, whenever you see bread and fish together, that's exactly what he's talking about. He's talking about the community gathering and sharing a meal of the very basic substance of life, and that is what we do at Holy Communion, at Holy Eucharist. So there's Jesus presiding over this meal. And he calls Peter a little closer to him. He says, Simon Peter, do you love me? Peter answers, well, of course, Lord, you know that I love you. Well, then Jesus asks him a second time, Simon Peter, do you love me? Suddenly, Peter's mind goes back to just a few days before, where he was asked a question like this. Do you know this man? I do not know him. Surely you know him. You're a Galilean. No, I have never seen this man. Remember that? Jesus denying, or Peter denying Jesus, not once, not twice, but three times. And so Jesus asks him a third time, Simon Peter, do you love me? And Peter gets indignant, according to John's record of this, upset that Jesus was doing this because, you know, Jesus is kind of pointing out to Peter what he did. There's more to it than that. And I know we've talked about this a little bit before, but it bears repeating in today's storytelling, this context that we have. Because it fails in translation a little bit. We hear the English word love. We know what that means. But in the original language in which this gospel was written, which was the Greek of that day, there are different words being used in this conversation. The first one is when Jesus says, do you love me more than these? He's actually asking a very specific question. He's asking, do you love me? And the word he uses is the word philein, which is the kind of root word that we talk about with philanthropy and philosophy, the lover of something. It's like kind of the sort of brotherly love, the clubby kind of love. And so Jesus actually asks him, do you love me more than these, your companions, your friends? Peter answers him, well, of course, Lord, you know that I love you. And he answers just like Jesus asked the question. Now, the second time that Jesus asks this question, the word is not the same in the Greek. The word is agape. Do you love me? And what Jesus is asking Peter is, do you love me like I have loved you? And we know that days before, the tremendous love of God was shown to the world by Jesus giving up his very life for us on the cross. A selfless act of self-sacrifice. You know, we live here in central Pennsylvania, and many of us have visited Gettysburg, and many of us, of course, as Americans going to public school, perhaps learned at one grade or another to recite the Gettysburg Address. And there's one line in that address that is very, very meaningful to me. It's that when President Lincoln said about the people who were buried in that great battlefield, he said, these here among us who have given the greatest last measure of devotion. That word devotion, it means sort of love. Now, he's talking about these soldiers who died for love of their nation, for love of their country. How much more would our reward be and our capacity be if we would do that, not for our nation, which is a wonderful thing, but for God, for the sake of God's love, for the sake of God's love for the world? That's what Jesus is asking Peter. Do you love me? Agape. Well, Peter says, yes, you know that I love you. And we look at that very carefully, and the word that Peter uses is not that word at all. It's the first one. Lord, you know I love you like a brother. So Jesus asks the third time, giving Peter yet a third chance to redeem himself. But interestingly, Jesus returns to the first word. He says, Simon Peter, do you love me like you love your brothers, your friends, your sisters? And that's when Peter gets indignant. He doesn't know what's going on. That's typical Peter. But then Jesus says something. He says, yes, you will come to love me as I have loved you. You, as a young man, you kind of gird yourself and you put yourself together in the morning and you go where you want to go and you do what you want to do. But there will come a day when someone else will carry you off and make you go where you don't want to go. And we know from history and looking back at it that that place that Peter went that he did not want to go was himself the cross. That Peter himself would be crucified just as Jesus was crucified, and he would give his life for the sake of the love of God, for the sake of proclaiming the gospel to all the world, to all of the nations of the world. And in this sacrifice, Peter's love, like Jesus' love, is made perfect. The net is not torn. I love this gospel because of one thing. And it's the way Jesus answers, or Peter answers the second time, and then Jesus goes on to this little teaching. Because what Jesus does is accept Peter's love at the level that Peter can give it in that moment. Jesus is not getting angry with Peter because he's not getting the point. He's not getting angry with Peter because he's not loving the same way that Jesus has loved him. He's not rejecting Peter's love. He's accepting it for what it is. And that's how God accepts our love. As much as we are able to do it in any moment of our life, God is willing to accept it. and still to offer to us the immense love that he shows to us on the cross. And that he bids us to do this love thing day in and day out, like Peter did, because eventually Peter grew into that tremendous love of being able to give his last greatest measure of devotion, of giving his life for the sake of the gospel and for Christ. So too can it be with us. That day by day, as we grow in the ways of love and the ways of Jesus, we too become more and more like Jesus. We become more and more the very instruments of God in professing God's love for our world. That is our call. That is our high mission, just as it was Peter's. God be good to us, and God be thanked that very few of us will actually give up our lives in such a way as to be crucified or to be martyred for the faith. But, we must resolve to give up our lives inch by inch by inch, day by day by day, as we put away our egos and put away our selfishness and move from the love of our brothers and friends to this selfless and self-giving love that does not count the cost. The love of Jesus for the world becomes our love for God. And how we express that love in our daily lives becomes a measure of our devotion. And so, my friends, when we listen to this particular lesson, some very important things are being said. That this great work of Jesus is not simply for us or for a chosen few, but for the entire world. And then that work will continue whether we can do it ourselves or not, because it happens in the power of the Holy Spirit. And the net will come in and it will count 153 fish, and the net will not be torn. And in fact, when finally we sit down at the great heavenly banquet and we can feast on this fish and this loaf of bread, which is the very life of Jesus, Jesus can ask us, David, do you love me? And wherever my love for Jesus is at that moment, I will answer, and whatever that is, he will accept it, because he loves me with his entire life, and so does he love you. This risen, transformed Jesus is no mere human being anymore. He is the promise and pledge of our lives. It is to what we aspire. It is to what we are called. And so, as we hear this lesson today, we raise our hearts to God in gratitude for the love that he gifts to us, and that we can return to him. And that in that love, we give of ourselves so that others may live. In this we express, yes, Lord, you know that I love you.